How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. List goes on and on. This is the most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Got a lot of stuff to talk about here today. We didn't do open lines on Friday, because, of course, Friday was the day that the big Hulk Hogan scandal hit. WWE fires Hulk Hogan amid racial slur controversy is the headline right now at WrestlingObserver.com. Spent a whole day talking about that. We had all sorts of people on to talk about it. David Bixenspan, Dave Meltzer, myself, Mike Sempervivi. So we did not do Open Line Fridays, which means we're going to do it today. If you want to give the phone, if you want to give us a call today, the phone number is toll free 1-800-878-PLAY. That is 1-800-878-7529. Four other numbers as well that I'll throw out after the commercial break. Talk about anything that is on your mind, and there is plenty of it. Hulk Hogan, the situation there. We could talk about UFC on Fox last night and some of the big fights that have been set up there. There's another UFC pay-per-view coming up this Saturday with Ronda Rousey in the main event. Got the UFC on Fox ratings. We've got news on the G1. Nakamura appears to have an elbow injury. And what that means for the rest of the G1, I guess we'll find out soon. There were a lot of people that figured he might be the eventual winner of the entire thing. So how this injury is going to affect everything is anybody's guess. These tournaments are intricately booked, which means if a guy like Nakamura gets injured, it can cause a great deal of disarray. So we'll talk about that here today as well. ROH had an iPay-per-view on Friday night featuring a one-hour match, if you can believe that. Roderick Strong and Jay Lethal win an hour for the ROH World title. We can talk about that and pretty much whatever is on your mind. Be back in just a minute with more Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi is joining us as well. A lot of stuff to talk about here on a Sunday. It is going to be open line Sundays today because we didn't have a chance to on Friday. Phone numbers 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 1-800-878-7529. We have four other numbers as well, depending on where you are. If you're west of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, 425-482-1686. Parts unknown, which is anywhere in the world, 425-398-7353. First-time callers, 425-398-7289. I want to kick it off today by, I know everyone's talking about Hulk Hogan, but a man you should be talking about is an honorable man, a great man, Filthy Tom Lawler, who was victorious last night over Jean Valente via second-round knockout. Filthy Tom had called the second round, and Jean Valente, essentially, he said it's not going past the first. He was wrong. And Filthy Tom was right. He won one for the Empire last night at UFC on Fox, Mike.
Yes, he did. He did us all proud and did it at 203 pounds. See how much bigger Jean Valente looked than Filthy Tom?
He was much bigger. He was much bigger.
Did some pushing around, and hey, Tom has not fought in the UFC in, 2 years? It's been a long time now, and you didn't know how he was going to come back, and had some rough times a little bit in the first round, but, you know, there's the boxing part of me just hates the way that most MMA fighters throw punches, and I understand that, you know, when you have so many disciplines you're incorporating into your game and when you cross-train, you know, you cannot have a pure boxer stance. But Jean Valente showed what you absolutely do wrong, which is be wide open and have your hands down as you lead into a punch, which Tom masterfully sidestepped and instead landed a counter right of his own dead on the chin, which folded Valente up cartoonishly. And Filthy Tom, Filthy Mania, running wild. We need a hero right now, Brian Alvarez. This is tough times. It has come crashing down, and it hurts inside for many, many people. And this could be the time that Filthy Tom Lawler could be the hero that we're looking for.
You know, the story of this fight was, besides the win by Filthy Tom, the story of this fight was that Tom went in there at 203 pounds. He didn't cut to 185. Tom went in there just a little bit under his natural weight. He shed a little bit of weight. He went in there as a light heavyweight. He faced a much bigger man. And like a warrior, like a hero, he went in there and he beat this man. This man who had cut a ton of weight and had rehydrated and went into the cage much, much larger. Tom went in there and beat this man. Because Tom is a role model for fighters everywhere. He's going to be on the show tomorrow. Filthy Tom is a regular here at WrestlingObserver.com. Usually does 1 to 2 shows a week. And we'll talk to him tomorrow, find out what was going through his mind, how he's feeling right now. He did get chopped up with leg kicks. But a great come-from-behind performance from our main man, Filthy Tom Lawler.
Shame on Jack Encarnacio. Shame on Stevie J. Shame on Mike Sawyer and David Bixenspan and Josh Nason for all picking Jean Volante.
I can't even believe it. I didn't even go and look. I couldn't bear to look. You know what's funny is I got to mention this. We were in Vegas and we had our annual convention a couple of weeks ago and it was supposed to be a Dave Meltzer Q&A, but people kept asking me questions, which was hugely embarrassing. I'm a very shy person, Mike. I know that's hard to believe, but when I'm not here ranting on the air, I am very, very shy. No, seriously, I honest to God actually am. But anyway, so one of the questions to both of us was, do you guys ever mark out? And I think Dave essentially answered, first off, that he hates the word mark. That's beside the point. Everybody knows what that term means. And I don't really mark out. I mean, sometimes I'll mark out in a comedic way, like trying to think of a good example. I don't know. But the reality is I very rarely get so into a match or a storyline that I leap into the air and shout and scream. I marked out like a little kid when Filthy Tom got that knockout. I jumped in the air and I jumped up and down. It was crazy. I was so, talk about being invested in a fighter. And to get me to watch prelims, I mean, let me tell you, that right there is quite the task.
Well, at least it was on national TV, so you didn't have to search around for it and try to figure out where your Fox affiliate was or your Fox Sports affiliate, since, you know, we all know how much you love sports. So they made it easy on you. And, hey, they lived up to his end of the deal. And, you know, I did pop. Because, you know, and hey, it's not like I have to cover this, you know, with a journalistic eye or anything like that. It's Filthy Tom Lawler. He is a member of the Empire and a friend of the site and a friend of us. And it was awesome. And I'm happy for him. And it's a good comeback for him. And in a division that needs, you know, some pomp and circumstance and color and emotion, you know, Filthy Tom, why not?
You know, the other thing that I was so happy about was not only did he win the fight, but Filthy Tom
knocked him the F out.
Well, he knocked him out, but the key is he got the $50,000 performance bonus. I don't know what he made for the fight.
Which is good, which means that they haven't held any of his free speech against him.
No. Well, I mean, you know, let's be honest. If he would have lost, based on what happened with Stitch Duran, I'm not sure he would be looking for another UFC fight. Who knows?
Take that, mustache.
Yeah, but he won. But the point is, he got the performance bonus, and now he is one step closer to buying Kane's residence.
Could he handle Tennessee, though? I don't know. He looks like he could handle Tennessee.
I'm pretty sure. Dave and I keep weird hours because of this job. And as you're well aware, Mike, sometimes we're going to record and we are interested in using Tom, but like if the show's going to be at 1 a.m., he's asleep and lives in Vegas. So the point of this is I think he'd be okay in Tennessee.
Probably so. The beautiful residence from Kane, too. It's one of those, I know you and Dave were knocking around the price. I mean, if that wasn't in Tennessee, I mean, it would be a multi-million dollar spread that he's got, and it is beautiful, which, hey, you know what? That $50,000 be a nice down payment, or at least assist to go to a down payment on that house.
Dude, here in Bothell, I don't live in San Jose. I live in Bothell, which is a suburb of Seattle. And if Kane's residence was on sale here, I mean, easily $5 to $8 million. And he's selling it for $800,000 because it's in Tennessee. So, yeah, I was looking at that and kind of salivating a little bit. But it is Tennessee. Nothing against any of you calling from Tennessee, but Let's see what's on everybody's mind. Let's go to the first phone call today. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, Mike. It's Danny Hernandez. How are you?
Danny, got me in a lot of trouble last week.
What the? And what's my mind? I've been reading the Daniel Bryan book.
Danny's ignoring me. Danny, you got me in a lot of trouble last week.
Well, I'm sorry. It's spell check, I guess, right?
It is spell check. Yes, Danny is the one that sent the tweet about Patrick. He had there was a minor typo in his tweet, which caused me to report that Patrick had been offered a developmental deal when, in fact, he hadn't. But again, Danny, I don't blame you. It was my fault for not following up on it. But
I blame both of you.
I wasn't going to name Danny, but Danny went on Twitter and said, you're welcome to call me out, so here we go. But anyway, Danny, you're reading his book. What do you think about it? Daniel Bryan's book.
It's good. I won't get to his one part. I don't know if you read it or anything, but it talked about he was going to have a match with Nigel McGuinness. It's like right after when Benoit died, and like one of the big spots they do is like the headbutts, you know?
Yep.
And like they're talking, and the book is like him and Nigel were thinking like they shouldn't do the match this certain way, but like cause he says like you gotta work smarter. But like now, like I'm thinking because in Bryan's last run, he was doing those headbutt spots with like Dolph Ziggler. Like I don't know what changed his mind that he would do certain spots like this, but. I don't know. It's pretty strange. Like his book, he went about how he should change his style because you know what happened with Benoit and stuff like that. But so far, it's a good read, and it's a pretty. I got it on ebook, and so he's a pretty good reader, even for his own book. So
listen, yeah, I want to thank you very much for the call. We got to head to a break. I will talk about the headbutts when we come back because I have some comments on it as a former wrestler. Back in a moment with more Observer Live Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Had a caller in the last segment ask about the headbutts in the wake of the death of Chris Benoit. Daniel Bryan and Nigel McGuinness were deciding they needed to work smarter, and he mentioned that Daniel Bryan had been doing some headbutts here in his last run. And Daniel Bryan would be a better guy to ask, but the impression that I got is, especially when I watched those matches, guys like Nigel and Bryan back in like 2005, 6, 7, I mean, they were really headbutting each other. They were going forehead to forehead, and I remember getting reports of people that just said like, it's like two bowling balls hitting, just this thunk as their heads hit. I mean, these were hard, attempting to draw hard way blood headbutts. And if you watch like the last year of WWE, guys are headbutting each other. But they're the headbutts where you essentially attack a guy's neck or his shoulder, and they're not actually going forehead to forehead. So I don't think you're seeing the same kind of headbutts today that you were seeing in 2006, 2007, 2005, that era. And thank God, because that is a... You don't need to be really headbutting each other. It's going to lead to problems down the road.
Someone tell Tomohiro Ishii that, though.
Oh, my God. Don't even remind me.
So... It is still being done. It's being done on the indie scene. It's not being done as much on television, certainly not in WWE. Those guys back then weren't thinking about now. And they, you know, it's, I know how incredibly stupid it is for a non-sports fan who's interested in science and things like that to sit back and go, well, there's always been dementia in boxing. They say guys are punchy. We know taking shots to the head isn't good. Why has everyone been so dense when it comes to football and hockey and wrestling and all of these other things? How did you not know? Why did it take you until now? This shouldn't be a surprise, but it was a culture thing. It's about driving it home and getting in your head. I mean, I grew up with like NFL Crunch Course. I grew up with like Don Cherry's fighting videos and hockey, and now we're seeing those guys start to kill themselves and start to drop dead, and we find out about their addiction problems, and it's just the culture needed to change, and hopefully the culture has changed for the most part, because you know, if soccer, they're talking about taking the header out of soccer, or they want to take it out for young kids playing. You know, can you imagine how much sense it makes to get hit in the head when you're supposed to be simulating sport? You know, times have changed. It's like blood. We just need to think about things a lot better, and we need to be smarter. And there's a generation coming that should have that information and should be better about it.
Alrighty, let's go to, we got a lot of callers here on the line. So Richard in Baltimore, you are on the air. Richard, what's going on?
Hey guys, this is Richard from Baltimore.
What's happening?
How you doing? Just wanted to let you know, I went to the Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view and just wanted to get my thoughts of the main event match. I noticed when I first got there, they had the autograph signings. I believe it was Roderick Strong, Jay Lethal, and Dalton.
Dalton Castle.
Yes.
I heard that Dalton Castle was ridiculously popular.
I mean, ridiculously, Brian. When you went in there, he had the longest line and the longest wait. It was insane. But just to let you know, the main event was, I thought it was pretty good. It started probably about 10 p.m., and when it was over, it was about 11, 12. And it was slow starting off. A lot of the fans was, you know, they weren't really amped. But as it continued, I think a lot of the fans thought that it was actually going to be a title change and not a 60-minute draw. But I can tell you, at the autograph signing, when I saw Roderick, he was literally drinking maybe about a gallon to 2 gallons of water. And I didn't think about it until after the match was over with. Well, maybe he's just trying to stay hydrated. So, But the match was excellent. I can tell you the place where it was held at was very hot. I mean, it had to have been about, when we got there, it had to been about 90, a little bit about 95 degrees outside. So everybody was sweating. People in the audience were sweating. Truth Martini was sweating through his suit. So I can imagine with Roderick and Jay, you know, they was pretty much dehydrated after the match, and I thought it was an excellent match.
You know, I want to thank you very much for the call. I watched the match. I didn't get a chance to see the whole show, but I did get some reports from earlier on in the day just talking about how ridiculously over Dalton Castle was. I mean, that's what all the people were talking about. He's got the longest line. There's so many people here want to meet Dalton Castle. And the match itself, I thought it was a very, very good match. I thought they worked super hard. I thought that, Roderick sweated out probably every gallon of water that he drank. I think the only thing that hurt it was the crowd. It was just you started the match 2.5 hours into a show and then decided you're going to go an hour. And the crowd was, in front of a better crowd, I think people actually would have voted it for Match of the Year. As it was with the crowd, I thought it was a very, very good match. It wasn't the match of the year, but there have been so many good matches this year that it would have been difficult to be. But the one thing that I thought watching it, and if anybody else watched the show, you can call in and give me your thoughts. The one thing I thought watching it was, it looks to me like they are, because they did a lot of stuff, obviously it was an hour, but when I watched it, it was like, there's so much stuff that I didn't see in this match. And so I got the impression that they're going to do a rematch and they're going to go an hour again. And then maybe they'll do a third match with like no time limit and they'll have a finish in that one. That was kind of the impression I got coming out of it. But very, very good match. Both guys are awesome. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out because it's very, very good. You didn't see it, did you, Mike?
No, not yet. And I really want to. No matter how you cut it, it just adds on another one to not only Jay Lethal's year, which has been good, but Roderick Strong's year has been great. So if nothing else, it certainly is another notch on his belt. And when it comes to Dalton Castle, his feud with the last real man, Silas Young, is a just natural, and it's a great, you know, I don't know how long they'll go with it, but to me, that's just a great undercard feud.
All righty, let's go to the Parts Unknown line. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Ed from Cleveland.
Yes, Ed.
By the way, Dolph Ziggler had buds a few months ago. Remember, I think he did it at Money in the Bank and then followed up on Raw.
That's right, yeah.
So, and those looked pretty damn brutal.
I remember there was one, I can't remember who did it, but somebody did a headbutt this year and busted themselves open. Don't recommend that.
Brian did it. Didn't he have a cut on his forehead?
It may have been, yeah. That wouldn't surprise me. You're supposed to not hit the guy in the head. That's the whole idea.
Because then the cut on the forehead was just on the recent episode of Total Diva 2.
Yeah, I mean, when I was coming up, they do the spot where they ram the two heads together, And right. It was always like, both of you put your forearms up and you hit forearms. Or if you were going to headbutt somebody, you'd grab their hair and you'd headbutt your own thumb. But right, this right. skull-on-skull headbutting, I mean, it's just, it's not good for you.
I agree. And then also, super stoked that both two of my favorite fighters, Ben Saunders and, of course, Filthy Tom, won last night. I just got done watching the fight. And bummed that Cleveland's own Jessica Isle didn't pull it out.
Hey, she was doing great for half a round. Then she got hit.
Right.
It was all downhill.
And then the Hogan stuff, it sucks. I mean, my getting further and further into finding out stuff about the business and listening to Dave talk, the whole Hogan's history of not putting guys over and all that kind of stuff, my disrespect has gone considerably. My respect has gone considerably down over the last 5 to 10 years. And this just, I mean, it sucks that it was on tape and it's forever ago. And that's how, like, a bunch of my friends are writing it off. But it still is like, come on. And then you have people like Michael Hayes still in there, but he's been caught on tape, but he's saying stuff like that backstage. And it is what it is, I guess.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. It's so hard to explain to a normal person the kind of stuff that happens in wrestling in terms of everything. I mean, yes, there are many guys, and everyone brings up Michael Hayes, but I mean, if you've been in wrestling for any length of time, it's probably significantly less today than it was. I mean, even when I started in like the mid to late 90s, I mean, you would hear things in the locker room that it was just, and I'm in the Northwest. I wasn't even in the South. You know, you would hear things in the Northwest in locker rooms, and it was just like, what? It was astonishing to me the things that people would say. But it was just a holdover from a previous era, and it certainly would. It doesn't fly. It shouldn't have flown then, but it did. That's just what people, just how people behaved. And trying to explain it to a normal person, it's impossible for them to fathom.
How many black fans are there out there? How many black fans have been out there for years? Now, how many blacks are in power in any wrestling organization? How many, you know, people of status? Disproportionate, you know? We're starting to get more and more voices now, you know, seemingly with WWE. You're trying to utilize, I guess, you know, Booker T to a lesser extent. But, like, you know, David Otunga and Byron Saxton and, you know, they may have started doing that for all the wrong reasons. You know, as far as being kind of like pressured into it or feeling, though, that they must make the move over merit. But the fact that it needs to change. And does it surprise me, I guess, that an old 60-year-old man, you know, from Florida, you know, it has got these thoughts? I guess not. You know, I guess it shouldn't shock me. It did, though, and it's too bad. And I mean, to me, this is much worse than the sex part of that tape coming out. I mean, not even close. Why it took this long, no idea.
All right, everybody, back in just a moment with more Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Phone lines are lit up, 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 1-800-878-7529. West of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, 425-482-1686. Parts unknown, 425-398-7353. First-time callers, 425-398-7289. Let's go to Ryan in, is it Cumberland?
Yes, and I'd like to give my opinion on the Hulk Hogan situation.
Please do.
My opinion is Hulk Hogan really isn't a racist because he endorsed Barack Obama during his first run against Sean McCain, and also Hulk Hogan did more for all the African-American wrestlers in WCW, such as Kamala, Virgil, getting them good work. And also he made a push for Coco Beware to be the Cruiserweight Champion, but they nixed that idea. And I feel the real racist might be WWE against the red, white, and blue wrestlers, such as Jack Swagger, Hulk Hogan, Kurt Angle, Sgt. Slaughter, etc., because of the way they've been treated over the years.
WWE is racist against Americans?
Remember, did Ryan say he had some train tracks? Was that a part of the early story? Wasn't there a story about that on After Dark?
The train track story. Yeah, something like that.
Go play close to those again after that.
Oh, Mike, come on. So those are your thoughts, Ryan?
Well, Alex Jones wouldn't even do WrestleMania because he thought WWE was racist towards the red, white, and blue wrestlers because he thought Jack Swagger should have been the babyface when he was feuding with the evil millionaire Alberto Del Rio. Explain that one.
He's racist against the red, white, and blues.
And he probably still holds a grudge against Hulk Hogan because Hulk Hogan nearly put Vince McMahon out of business. He almost put him in jail, so that has a little bit to do with it, too.
Well, Ryan, I want to thank you very much for your call and these stunning allegations. Perhaps we can look further into the allegations, Mike, of racism against the red, the white, and the blue.
That's I'll leave that one to you, my man.
Smurfs. They would be the blue, right?
Or somebody being choked out, which...
Let's go to the first-time caller line. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Greg in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yes, Greg.
Bring the show back to life after he just killed it, please.
Oh, Mike, you go after poor Ryan every time.
I've actually been a subscriber for a few years. I really just, over the last month or so, started really taking advantage of it, and I'm really enjoying everything you guys put out. Thank you for that.
What were you doing when you weren't taking advantage of your subscription for years?
Good question.
Okay.
I don't know. I just decided to just recently. But anywho, I've been going back and listening to the shows you guys did around the time of the Colt Cabana podcast and the subsequent McMahon interview with Austin that followed. And one thing that sticks out to me, and I'm thinking about this in light of the conversation you guys had this week about Kevin Owens and the possibility that he's being pushed down the card because he's not seen as a top guy by some people within the company. And you know, the one thing that CM Punk said that I've always thought stuck out is the fact that no one in the company is asking questions about anything regarding their money or where they're at in the card or anything. And as a wrestling fan, it's nothing more frustrating than seeing people like Dolph Ziggler or even a Damian Sandow, who went from being one of the most popular guys on the roster to not even being on TV, just continuously never get a chance to really show what they're fully capable of doing. And I'm going to throw an idea at you and get your thoughts on this. But at this point, if I'm somebody like Dolph Ziggler, as much as I enjoy him as a performer, I'm kind of hoping that he does not re-sign with the WWE for one main reason. That's the fact that I do not believe he's ever going to be properly utilized in that company. And I feel that as opposed to a polarizing figure like CM Punk that is not the most well-liked person on the planet, somebody who by all accounts is well-respected by his colleagues and like a Dolph Ziggler, if he were to really, if he was dissatisfied and he were to not re-sign and then I think that would inspire some other people within the company to speak out. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call and supporting the product for several years now. Here's the thing with Dolph Ziggler, and anybody really. It's still the biggest wrestling company in the world. And of all of the wrestling companies in the world, you stand to make the most money as a pro wrestler in that company. So, essentially, if you're Dolph Ziggler and you decide, I feel like I should be higher on the card. I am going to not re-sign, and I'm going to work the indie scene. Now, you can make some money on the indie scene, obviously. And if you're a big enough name, you can probably make some pretty decent money on the indie scene for maybe a couple of years. In WWE, you pay for your own ground transportation, you pay for your own hotel, etc. When you're an indie star, I mean, they give you your payoff, and they pay for your flight, and they pay for your hotel, and they pay for everything. So there's a lot of perks initially to being a independent guy immediately off WWE television, but it doesn't last forever. And TNA is not paying guys a lot of money. Lucha Underground, I don't even know what's going on with Lucha Underground. I mean, maybe you could work some tours for New Japan. But you got to remember that even before, back when TNA was still doing 1.3 million viewers, there were a lot of guys that left WWE and went to TNA, whether they were fired or whatever, and they would walk down the street, and these are guys like Mick Foley, where people would come up to them and say, hey, man, it's too bad you're not wrestling anymore. And Foley would say, I'm on national TV every single week. That's how under the radar it was if you weren't a part of WWE. There's so much less money to be made. You know what Dolph Ziggler's doing right now? He's making a movie through WWE. And so as much as it sucks for him, I'm sure, to not be pushed to the level he believes he's being pushed at, he's making a lot of money. He's out there every week. He's a famous guy, and he's able to use that fame that he gets being on TV with WWE every week to do comedy shows, and now he's doing a movie. So these are things you really got to consider. It's very easy to just say, I should just quit and go somewhere else where I'll be utilized correctly. But you got to think about, where will that be? What are you giving away to leave WWE? And when you really think about that question right there, that's why a lot of guys are so scared.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a profession, a career for these guys. You know, whether no matter what you think of them or not, or their dedication to what you believe the business should be, and, you know, quit, you know, and take a stand. That just means there's money left open for somebody else who's going to take his spot. And, like, you know, I couldn't have said any better than you when it comes to, you know, everything around this. Yeah, you can make money for a little while, but looking long term, if this is, you're young and you're in that position, you know, and you like living that life. And Dolph Ziggler, I'm sure, yes, I guess would love to be the face of the company, John Cena-like, but like you said, he gets to do his comedy shows and he gets to live the life. And hey, that can be more important than having 5-star matches for people and work rate and things like that. And, you know, unfortunately, WWE is not everyone's cup of tea, but you can't blame the guys for being there. And, you know, whether they're treated well or not, they're making more there than they could anywhere else.
All right, let's try the first-time caller line. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Brian, this is Six Pack from the board.
Six Pack, yes.
All right, I heard the guy Ryan, he called in, and I have to say that I feel just that much stupider for having heard what he had to say. You can't be racist towards red, white, and blue. That's dumb. Then anything to suggest that Vince McMahon is anti-American is literally quite possibly the stupidest thing that has ever been said ever in the history of Figure Four Wrestling or Wrestling Observer Newsletter. That is just stupid. That guy does not deserve to live.
Wow. That's
hey,
too...
Mike
told him to go play by the train tracks.
Well, he should, and in front of the train.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Capitalist promoter such as Vince McMahon, really, all Ryan did was sully his reputation by daring to say something like that, you know, Vince being Vince and all.
Let's please not wish death upon any callers, Six-Pack, but anything else you'd like to bring up?
Maybe.
Hey, man, this whole Hogan thing, it's going to blow over by Saturday. 2 years from now, he's going to be on WWE television telling people, brother this and brother that. This is not the biggest thing that's ever happened. Anyone who suggests otherwise, just naive.
Well, Six, I want to thank you very much for the call. I want to say something about this Hogan thing that I thought was interesting. Okay, first off, in the last couple of days, people have been coming out of the woodwork in support of Hulk Hogan. All sorts of different people. And when I first started reading all of this stuff, I kind of thought, oh my God, within 6 months, you know, this biggest WrestleMania of all time is coming. They're trying to break the Hulk Hogan Andre record. I mean, man, people there are so many people that have publicly come out so sympathetic to Hulk Hogan that I'm almost sitting here thinking, man, this guy may be back by WrestleMania. Now, with that said, I was told on Friday, and I reported here on this show, that I was expecting more stuff to be out Friday afternoon. I had pretty much been told that there were certain outlets who had already finished their stories and they were in the middle of getting them ready for publication. Now, this did not come out on Friday. And, of course, Saturday and Sunday are somewhat slow news days, so I do expect that more stuff is probably coming out tomorrow. And there may be more. It may be worse. It may pile on. I cannot predict where this is going to go. And everybody that's backing Hulk Hogan, they haven't seen this new stuff that is allegedly going to come out. I don't know. Maybe they put out the worst stuff first, and everything else is going to be tame in comparison, and then people will really be coming out of the woodwork. I don't know, but there has been a lot of support for the Hulkster over the last couple of days from a lot of people all over the place.
Yeah, I guess he could come back from it, but again, you're talking about a 61-year-old guy. You know, how long can he continue to look like Hulk Hogan? And if he doesn't look like Hulk Hogan, how can he be Hulk Hogan? And if you're thinking, you know, it could be a lot longer freeze out than that. And it should be a lot longer freeze out than that. Look at the money that's being cost with them scrapping everything that's in production. Look at the money that's being cost by not being able to sell his merchandise. You know, obviously you could sell it, but they're making the right decision and pulling it off of there because you just want to cut all ties, which they did. You know, enough time may go by where he doesn't have the chance to come back for whatever reason that is. He just doesn't get the opportunity to. So this really could be it because, to me, it was about the vitriol. And I understand there are people coming out. But when you look at what he said, again, he was not doing a Richard Pryor bit from the 70s. He was very clear about what he said, how he said it. Now, do I believe that proves Gawker correct for releasing a sex tape about Hulk Hogan? No, because I don't care who Hulk Hogan's banging, and I don't care what happens in anybody's bedroom, and that to me isn't news. It's garbage. It just doesn't matter. You know, what was a far more newsworthy thing to me were these comments, which it takes 3 years. You know, people are saying, well, we saw this. Nobody mentioned this one. This, to me, is far more newsworthy, if anything's going to be newsworthy.
Well, let me tell you something about that. Listen, I was born in the mid-70s, okay? And, you know, you grow up and you read about the 60s and I mean, when I was in school, if I would have really thought about it, it would be like, in 2015... I mean, there's no way race relations are going to be an issue. And here it is, 2015. I read the newspaper, and it's like, Jesus, we're back in the 60s again. It's 2015. What is going on? But the point is, it's a very volatile time, and this stuff came out right now. And that, it may be that things are more volatile now than they were 3 years ago. And 3 years ago, people saw this and they were like, well, you know, this is bad, but hey, the sex tape is getting all of this traction, so let's go with this. And now here it is, 2015, and it's like, now we'll get headlines with this way more so than we would 3 years ago. I mean, it may be that, I don't know. But we'll be back in just a moment to talk more Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Two more shows coming up today, by the way, for subscribers and non-subscribers. I'll be up with Vinny later on tonight. Got a brand new Brian and Vinny show. This week, we are going to watch New Japan on Access, as well as ROH Television. And I can talk more about that Jay Lethal Roderick Strong one-hour match as well. That's coming up tonight on the program. And by the way, we're taking one last trip to my favorite Mongolian Grill before it goes out of business. So I'll try not to shed too many tears on the program.
Very sad.
Yeah. And then midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific, I will be on After Dark Radio tonight. It's going to be a very fun show. This show is free. If you have TuneIn Radio, you can search Dark Matter or just go to artbell.com and there will be a link to the Dark Matter Radio Network. I'll be up there for 2 hours starting at 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern. Have a very special guest on tonight, Brian Forshner. He's talking about a series of murders from the early 20th century. In which he is essentially, what happened was there were a series of murders that have been attributed to a man who the police had called Jack the Strangler. And I would bet 99.9% of people have never heard of Jack the Strangler, but it's just funny to read about it because this guy did things as horrific or maybe more horrific than Jack the Ripper. And Jack the Ripper has been famous now for well over 100 years, and no one's ever heard of Jack the Strangler. So we'll have Brian Forshner on tonight. Going to be a lot of fun. The link is up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com as well. And in the second hour, by the way, today, Mike has been sending me some pictures here of, blood. This was from the G1, correct?
Yes, we were talking about headbutts earlier on. Tenzan did a diving headbutt on Toru Yano, which split him open and immediately had him literally pouring blood. Literally.
How about that? All right, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sports Zone, American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. The list goes on and on. This is the most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Already had a lot of stuff to talk about today. We've been taking calls all day. The highs and lows of taking calls on a sports radio show. And we may have a very special, unexpected guest coming up after the break. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. If you want to give us a call today, 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 1-800-878-7529. Number of other available opportunities to call us as well on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And we'll be taking your calls on Hulk Hogan. There was UFC on Fox last night. If you want to talk about the G1, the ROH high pay-per-view, pretty much whatever is on your mind is fair game. Don't forget, next week is the beginning of two straight weeks of Ultima Lucha, which is the WrestleMania main event of Lucha Underground. And there's also going to be a AAA pay-per-view coming up. So we should have a lot of Lucha stars on this show over the next 2 weeks. My guess is, based on several things, actually, I think we're going to have a different guest on the show every single day coming up this week. My guest list is packed. So prepare for that tomorrow. We got some Lucha Underground guys. We've got an individual I won't mention yet because it's not confirmed, but would certainly be a newsworthy individual, and many others as well. So that's coming up over the next week. We are here daily at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, and we have a replay during the weekdays at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. This show here, the Sunday show, replays every Monday at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern. So a lot of stuff coming up, everybody. Check it out. We'll be back in just a moment, perhaps with a very special guest, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Got a lot of people waiting on the phone lines. I'd like to ask everybody to stand by for a little while because I believe we've got a very special guest here on the line today. George, are you there?
I sure am.
George the Animal Steel is on the line today. What's going on?
Well, I was listening to your show as I was going with my granddaughter to get a key lime pie.
And, sounds exciting.
I was talking about the racial issues in wrestling, and I really wanted to address that from the old school.
Please do.
I heard somebody saying something about the locker room in the 90s and so on. I go back to the 60s, and there was not a man in the locker room that was not respected in those days. I was there when it changed, and it did change. But I wrestled with Bobo Brazil and all the top black wrestlers, Puerto Rican wrestlers, whatever you want to call them, great guys. And the respect started falling apart, actually, when we started to get what I call smart marks.
Mm-hmm.
And people started talking about a jobber.
Sure.
In my background in the wrestling, going way back to the 60s, a guy that put you over on television was a carpenter. You understand the difference?
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't jobbing for you. He was helping build you.
Yes.
And so he took good care of those guys and respected them big time. And that whole locker room, everyone in the locker room respected each other. In the 60s, the 70s, early 80s, it started changing as things started to expand with the new way of doing wrestling. But the old school was nothing but respect for each of us. And we had kayfabe. You know what kayfabe is, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And we handled, the promoters didn't do kayfabe, the wrestlers did. We were independent contractors. And we depended on taking care of business for our income. There was no contracts, there was no health insurance or anything like that. We took care of each other and looked out for each other. There was no security like there is now, or no barricades. If a guy was going to the ring and might have a riot, and we did have riots because our heat was real, no one left the locker room until the show was over, because if you needed help to get out of the ring and get to the locker room, the boys were there to help you. We didn't have a lot of police help. So the business was totally, totally different in those days. And again, total respect for each other. So when I started hearing all this racial stuff, I had been into some independent wrestling locker rooms, And yeah, that's true there. And I've seen some things in the WWF is where I'm coming from, really. Locker rooms, they were a little bit strange. But that was a whole new breed of cat, a whole new business happening. Guys were under contract. It was a new, it was a change in the business. So when we start talking about racial slurs and so on in the locker room, in what I call the old school days or the real days of wrestling, it just wasn't there.
So,
when I heard that, it bothered me. I mean, it just got me, what's going on here?
So you never heard anybody use that terminology, even among people who greatly respected each other?
No, we just didn't do it. I mean, if a guy was new in the business, he kind of sit over in the corner and kept his mouth shut.
Sure.
But the top guys, no, never. It just didn't happen. Some guys, you know, you're talking business now, and you want you to put somebody over. And to me, it was always a little bit of money involved in putting somebody over. So it's a business arrangement.
So you feel that you really started seeing changes in a I guess on a major league level. Did you say like in the 80s, in the 90s?
Absolutely, it started changing. Again, they were under the boys were under contract. They had protecting each other. That wasn't that important anymore because they had security there for you. Everything was covered. I can remember we had a dog by the name of Matilda.
That's right.
One team used, the
Bulldogs.
British Bulldogs. Great guys. But they used Matilda in their show, but they hated the dog. So their opponents a lot of times would bring Matilda into the ring in front of the crowd. I'm going, that's breaking kayfabe. Things were changing. And that's not a knock on those guys. It's just that the business was changing big time. But with the media the way it is to now, the way we did business back then could not survive. Wouldn't survive.
Well, let me ask you this question, because a lot of wrestlers have come out in the last couple of days, and some of them have very much stuck up for Hulk Hogan. And
sure.
I've heard from people that have said, you know, I know what Hogan said, I read the comments, but, you know, Hogan did so much for me, and he did so much for this person and that person. And in your dealings with Hulk Hogan over the years, do you have an opinion on what's come out over the last couple of days?
I was very surprised and shocked because I never saw that in Hulk. I never heard it in the locker room. I never saw that. And I didn't hang out with Hulk. He was a superstar. I was just an old man riding his waves. So I never. But here's what I did see in Hulk that made a difference to me about him, okay? We used to have a lot of kids, the Make-A-Wish kids come in.
Yeah.
And, they bring him in an ambulance, have a gurney. Twice I saw, and I was at this point, I'm an agent, so I've got to deal with this. And you can't, in the way things are today, you can't let an adult be with a child unless somebody's there to supervise.
Sure.
So often I was right down the hall as he was talking to some of these kids. One of them was a little boy. His face was all, puffed up from the drugs he was on. He was terminally ill, cancer. And he was so excited in his family to see Hulk Hogan. And Hulk was a little bit late. And as he come in, the kid just sparkled. I mean, he was in a lot of pain, but he sparkled. And he saw Hulk had his weightlifting gloves on because he was late getting from the gym. The kid grabbed his hand and was sucking on the sweat of the glove from his workout glove. So Hulk took the gloves off and gave them to the kid. Then he liked the headband, so Hulk tied that around his head. Then he liked the, wasn't the championship belt, but he had his weightlifting belt on.
Sure.
And the boy, he put that around him. And the family was all, excited and so on, and they left. I think this is in Chicago. We returned 3 weeks later for a show, and the parents were there with a picture of the boy in the coffin with everything that Hulk had gave him on in the coffin. Hogan broke down and cried. I did. I had tears in my eyes. You know, that's pretty powerful. When you realize that that meant so much to that little boy that's dying, that's pretty powerful. And then another situation with Hulk that I saw was a little girl, and this was in Cleveland, that was terminally ill. She was about 12 years old, and the father had told Hulk that something, she was really upset, that he didn't know if she knew that she was terminal or what was going on. So Hogan had her down the hallway a little bit. I was sitting about, 10 yards away in the chair, just listening and watching. And he started telling the little girl that he knew that some tough things were going on with her, and that he was going to, he had a few more bad people to beat up, and he'd meet her in heaven. She started crying. She said, I can't go to heaven. I won't be there. And he said it about three times. No, no, I'm going to beat up some bad guys, and I'll meet you in heaven someday. And finally, she said, I can't be there. He said, well, why not? And she started telling him about a guy in the hospital, a male nurse that was playing with her under the covers.
Mm.
He was livid. He went up, he told the father, he said, this is what's going on, and if however you handle it, all my money's behind you. So that gives you another side of that whole story. Now, did he screw up on the tape and make some? Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Is there an excuse for that? No, there's not. I understand that some family matters were involved in that, and I understand that that can make you a little bit over the edge, but he screwed up.
Well, George, just out of my curiosity, I know
thing,
you...
Then I'll listen, okay?
Sure.
He screwed up. But you know what? Jesus Christ died on the cross for screw-ups. We're all screw-ups. Go ahead, sir.
I'm just to go back to the racial aspect thing of the 60s and then actually becoming worse in the 80s.
Yeah.
I know you were obviously in Detroit and in Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWF for years.
Right.
How often did you go down south? Because I've heard more than a few stories about guys who wrestled down south and what it was like in locker rooms and on the roads. That would be in complete contrast to what you're saying. Were you just in a better spot, or what do you think the difference was?
I can tell you, I would never wrestle in the South, but I can tell you this. One of my very best friends in wrestling for a long time was a gentleman by the name of Bobo Brazil. You've heard him, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Bobo used to talk about going to the South and wrestling and how all of black people were put up in the bleachers way up and behind screens like it was chicken wire screens. They couldn't mix with the other people. He's told me these stories and how it broke his heart. But he also talked about being in the locker room with the other boys, with the wrestlers, and he didn't see that there. Now, he's not with us anymore. He's dead. So I'm just telling you what he told me, that the locker room was so much cleaner than society itself. And I'm sure that, again, if you're talking about workers, and a lot of them are not the toughest guys in the world, when Bobo Brazil came in, they showed him nothing but respect. I would stand on the Bible and say that. I'm sure of that.
Well, Jim, hold on 1 second. We're going to head to a break. We'll come back for more in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Very happy today to be joined by a surprise guest. George the Animal Steel is here on the line. We've been talking about the Hulk Hogan situation here. And you've been around for a long time, George.
That means I'm an old man. Yeah.
In and around pro wrestling. And you've seen it all, and you've seen a million scandals. And the number one thing that people have been talking about of late is, can Hulk Hogan come back from this? And my feeling is yes, because Hulk Hogan has come back from a lot, and Hulk Hogan was a childhood hero of so many people, and my guess is that within a couple of years, probably at the most, we'll probably be seeing Hulk Hogan up and around again. I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
Probably. It comes down to value, and if he becomes a value to the WWE, he will be back. They don't see a value in it, he will not be back. It's a money, it's a black and white thing there. And that's not racial. It's money I'm talking about.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I think he can survive it. I think he probably will survive it, but it's going to take some time. And the guy did the best thing he could do at the end of it, from what I've heard, was to apologize. What else could he do? He was a jerk for a day, let's put it that way. But he apologized. What else can he do?
Another thing I wanted to ask you about, since you mentioned we were talking about racial slurs in locker rooms and that sort of thing, and you've come on here to talk about that, and whatever anybody said in a locker room anywhere, the reality is, as you've mentioned, back in a time where arenas were segregated, black wrestlers were used well. They were pushed very, very hard. And it's not just, we're not just talking like black wrestlers, but we're talking gay wrestlers And it seemed to me that the wrestling locker rooms, regardless of what usage of terms anybody said in a locker room, whether they threw around terms liberally or not, the reality is that as promoters, as bookers, wrestling seemed to be a lot more open than the rest of society. They seem to be ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Is that because the only color that matters is green?
It has a lot to do with it, absolutely. I'll tell you, when I first, I was making $4,300 a year teaching and coaching in 1961. I had two children, a third one on the way. I was hurting. I needed some an income. A friend of mine was a wrestling fan. I never watched it, I'll be honest with you. I looked at it as a joke and moved on. But he kept telling me about all this money that could be made. And one night, I was out looking for a job as a bouncer in the bar. I took my buddy with him. When you're drinking beer and you got a buddy, you don't get hired as a bouncer, I found out. But he talked me into calling up a local promoter about 1:30 in the morning. I wanted to be a rat. And I went over and visited him the next day. And 3 weeks later, I was in the gym training and learning to be a wrestler. My first reaction was I was hot because I was a pretty good athlete and a bit of a fighter. And they started showing me the art of working. And I thought they was challenging my integrity as an athlete. And I didn't like it until maybe it took me about a year and a half. And I was only there because I needed the money. As I started to learn the art of working, and there was an art to working up until just a few years ago, the art of working is gone. Now it's more of a performing. Everything is pretty much laid out in front. But the art of working a match and working a crowd was unbelievable. It was a fantastic thrill for me to go on and get people so mad wrestling a guy like Bruno Sammartino that they want to kill me, and then to get out of the ring without a riot. I mean, that's something very special. Some of that stuff is lost today in the business, and that's not a knock at the business today. Today they probably have bigger, faster, stronger, and better athletes than we ever had. But the old school, the art of wrestling, working a match, is totally lost. And that's why you don't have the heat that we used to get. It's a totally different business now. Again, that's not a knock. It's just the world has changed big time.
My wife's great uncle was over today, and he was talking about how when he was a kid, everybody would go over to whoever's house had the TV in town, because this was like the late 40s, early 50s, and very few people had a TV. And someone invariably had a TV, and one of the things that they always went over to watch was wrestling.
And there were very few things it was on.
Yeah, and wrestling was huge. The DuPont Network, the late 40s, early 50s, Gorgeous George. You broke into the business later, and you mentioned that you weren't a fan of wrestling before you got into
it. I've seen it, but I didn't buy, you know, I was a football guy. What can I say?
Sure.
But I'll tell you a funny story about the black and white TV. 1967, I was in Pittsburgh. I was George Steele. I got my name Steele because of the Steel City. And green, the color TV was just starting to come out, but most of the television was still black and white. And I had a Clorets in my mouth. That's how the green tongue started. People called up the switchboard because it was live. How come his tongue's? They thought their TV was messed up, the new color TV. So, you know, those kind of things to me are really funny because I just saw so many changes. I saw stop action on television where you could throw a punch and they could stop it right at contact.
That's right.
All that early on, none of that was going on. Instant replay in a wrestling match. Come on. Everything we did originally that you're talking about in those days in the 50s, there was no instant replay. There was no stop. It was just honest, God, hard work.
You
and,
know,
go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things, I mean, you could talk about this. One of the things that I think is badly missing from wrestling today, and I don't want to disrespect wrestling today because there's a lot of great wrestling, and hey, we talk about it every week, but
absolutely.
One of the things that I think is really missing is when you tell that Claret story. I've interviewed a million wrestlers, and every now and then you'll hear guys say, well, you know, the promoter gave me a name, and I didn't really like the name, but he wanted me to use a name, so I used it, and it stuck. Okay, that happened. Every now and then you'll hear somebody tell that story.
Yeah.
But in terms of the creation of the character and being able to build your own persona, I mean, today, to me, that's the biggest thing lacking, in that everybody's given a character, and you're given a script, and you're given a storyline, and essentially you're an actor in a play that somebody else has created. And I really think what's missing is the ability for wrestlers to be themselves and use their own creativity and come up with your Clorette's idea, for example, or your idea to do this, or your idea to do that. That seems to be the biggest thing missing today.
You're absolutely 100% right. And when it's not coming from within yourself, it becomes very plastic. Very plastic. Unfortunately, you can educate people to love the plastic part of it, too. Business is great, so let's not knock it. But some people talk about me about eating a turnbuckle.
Sure.
Now, who in the world would come up with a crazy idea like going out and eating a turnbuckle? How did that happen? Pittsburgh, again, they used to give away gifts before wrestling shows at the studio, because you only get 150 people in there, and we needed the people in the studio to add some life so that we could draw them to the arena. We made our money in the arena in those days. It was not a television business. It was an arena business. So this one particular day, they give away little couch pillows. This was about 1967, and so there was like 250 couch pillows in the arena. Somebody got mad and threw a couch pillow at me. I'm in the ring. What am I going to do with a couch pillow? I've only been in the business 4, 5, 6 years. This is new. So I know if I throw it back at her, I'm going to get hit with another 250 pillows. If I sit on it, it's going to be boring. So I take a bite out of it, snap out of it, tear it, start throwing the stuff in the air. It was lighter than air. It was a little pillow, but it was a lot of stuff coming out of it, floating down like snow. I put it over my opponent's head and started choking him. Great TV, looking at the camera, doing the thing. When I ripped it off, he was blue because the stuffing was lighter than air, and every time he took a breath in, it almost killed him. I went to the locker room. Everybody's laughing. I almost killed that guy. Ha, ha, you know, ha, ha. Somebody said, maybe if you could get somebody to throw a pillow at you every day. And then Tony Pugliese said, maybe you could eat the turnbuckles. And they laughed. About 2 weeks later, I was working with Strongbow. And how do you have a bad match with Strongbow? It's almost impossible. But anyhow, it was not getting over. And we were both working hard. Nothing was happening. I looked at the turnbuckle. I thought, I wonder. So I went over and took a bite out of it. It tore. It was an old Everlast turnbuckle. Dirty. I guess a million people have sweat on the dang thing. But I tore it, started throwing the stuffing in his eye, and working them over that way, and we had a riot. Duh. Why use wrestling holes if I can use a turnbuckle and have a riot?
That's right.
So, you know, that was just another add-on. No one planned on that, and we didn't know that was going to happen. The TV show, when they threw the pillow at me, we didn't know that was going to happen. 90% of the things I did in the ring was called in the ring. Everything, you know, we had a couple spots we might call. I always knew what the finish was. It was predetermined. Everything else was pretty much real in the ring. And that's why it was so believable.
So funny. It's so funny when you mention that, because I can just imagine, I don't know, but I would imagine that today, probably a good 80% of the stuff that you did, if you did it today, you'd go back to the locker room and they'd probably say, Jim, let's not do that next time. And that would be the end of that.
You're exactly right. The deal went in the 80s, and I was around, you know, age 50 and beyond. I was a dinosaur in the business in the late 80s. But it was still getting over with that nonsense, and it had gone to the point where I could carry a mind doll and have them kick the mind doll and sell it like it was me.
Well, Jim, we gotta head to a commercial break, but I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. I'd love to have you back on, and we'll connect during the break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every single day. Yeah, we're even here on Saturdays. There is a 10 a.m. Pacific and a 5 p.m. Pacific replay on Saturdays. Monday through Sunday. There you go. We're going to take some phone calls. We got a lot of people on the line. I want to thank George the Animal Steel for his surprise appearance today. Didn't even know he was going to call in, but apparently he was listening to the show and wanted to comment, and so we got a bonus appearance by George Steele here on the air. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is John from Memphis.
Yes, John.
I want to talk about the what's going on with the Divas Division right now.
All right.
I'm a bit cautiously optimistic about how things are going because how they are giving more time to do matches. Like, was like 11 minutes at Battleground, and a combined 22 minutes on Raw. And I can't help but wonder, though, if it's just going to be like a temporary thing, if it's going to be back to 5 minute distraction roll-ups, or Triple H is going to have his way, because he has been vocal about giving, you know, women more time, like at NXT.
Well, here's what I can, let me say one thing, then I'll let you keep going. The deal is this. This is an angle that is built around Stephanie right now. Now, I would not have built this around Stephanie myself. However, because it is built around Stephanie, that means they're going to let it go longer than they would if it were not. And so, Vince will change his mind on the drop of a hat, as we saw with Kevin Owens. Yeah. But at the same time, Kevin Owens got a big win over John Cena. And Kevin Owens lasted a lot longer than I kind of expected before Vince decided to move him down the card. The women, I mean, Stephanie is involved. She wasn't involved with Kevin Owens. Triple H is involved. He wasn't involved with Kevin Owens. It's going to get a little bit longer to see if it will work. They are getting more time. They are being taken more seriously. But we'll see. There are a lot of things about it that this isn't NXT. I mean, that's the bottom line. This is not NXT. It's WWE. It has been well over a decade. It's been more than a decade that the women haven't been taken seriously by the WWE audience. So it's not like you can just snap your fingers and bring some people up and all of a sudden they're going to be taking this seriously like they do in NXT. It's a totally different brand with totally different fans. It's going to take time, and you got to do it right.
You know who takes women seriously?
Ed?
Well, that's true, but Stardom over in Japan, where cheerleader Melissa just went and had a match today, but Mako Satomura, who is a great women's professional wrestler, is great and has been one of the best ones of the last God knows how many years, 15 years, whatever it is, defeated Kerry Hojo for the World of Stardom title. So I know Ed likes to bring up a lot about blue pants and stuff like that, but a real, and no offense to anybody here in America, but a different level, different type of deal in Japan, and Mako Satomura is pretty great, and she came back and won a title, so that's good.
All right, let's get through these calls. Rex, you are on the air. Rex, what's going on?
Hey, well, I just as a correlate to the Hogan thing, I think WWE took Warrior back. I mean, Warrior, like in 2005 or something, he said some really nasty stuff about Arabs and Muslims and homosexuals. And that didn't hurt him, I don't think, because he was nobody. He hadn't wrestled since Halloween Havoc. And but also, I mean, it had been, you know, 10 years. And it just suited them to bring him back. I think Hogan... on Twitter, Booker T, Big E, they're burying Hogan. You know, Big E was talking about how the NWO, like their whole aesthetic, that was appropriated from like cool black culture, from gang culture. They had hand signs. They did graffiti. They wore special colors. They even split up into different groups that wore different colors.
They wore FUBU. Lex Luger was wearing FUBU, for God's sakes.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I mean, Luger and Hennig were like these hardcore gangsters hanging out with Conan. Jeez. So I just think it's on a different level. I mean, it's not something that that I think a lot of people are willing to forgive. I don't think. Well, what do you think?
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for the call. When I first saw these comments, and I'd actually, before they even came out, there had been a lot of rumors. And one person who claimed that they had seen or was aware of what Hulk Hogan had said. I mean, they flat out said, Hulk Hogan will never come back from this. That's what they said. So I don't know if they've seen more that has come out and it's worse. I don't know. I just know that that's what they said. Now, in the aftermath of this, what came out was pretty freaking bad. And in the aftermath, there's a part of me that's surprised, and I guess really there's a part of me that isn't surprised, about how many people are coming out of the woodwork completely backing Hulk Hogan in this situation. They've already forgiven him. It's not even been the weekend yet. They're already forgiving him. So my gut is that he'll be back, because he's always back. I mean, the steroid scandal after the years of the childhood heroes, say your prayers, take your vitamins, lying on Arsenio, he came back. I mean, he's come back from everything. The comments that he made about John Graziano, or the Graziano son. I can't remember if the son was John or if that was the father. But the Nick Hogan car accident, the young man that was, the things that Hulk Hogan said, it was just astonishing. He came back from it. He's come back from everything. So, no, I find it hard to believe that this could be the one he never comes back from. And I'm not saying anything about what I think of anything. I'm just saying that from the reaction of people this weekend, I think he'll be back. Maybe much sooner than people think.
If that's the case, I would be shocked. I really would be shocked at this point.
You'd be shocked.
I probably am. And that's really depressing all the way around, because how many chances do you give a guy, even if that guy is Hulk Hogan? You know, you wouldn't even let it go 6 months. You'd reward him with a WrestleMania, you know.
Well, I don't think he'll be back in Mania this year. But the year after, I don't know.
Again, all of this money he's costed you, the fact that, you know, I get just his Vince McMahon's history with Hogan, they don't have to bring him back. And maybe when people said that he'd be over when it comes to this, he's been able to bounce back from not, you know, having the divorce and a lot of the car accident with Nick and all of these things that have happened. And he's still been able to bounce back and kind of get, you know, a tentacle here or there. There was that website thing that he was doing, and, you know, there's still licensing money to be made and things like that. But maybe that's going to start drying up, because, you know what, now more than ever, we have people that'll actually speak up against certain things like this, no matter what, you know. For as many people as that may back Hulk Hogan, are they a desirable group to have back you? You know, how many people will stand up the next time when somebody tries to hire Hogan and go, no, look at the history of this guy and look what he just said. And forget about look what he just said. Look how he said it, you know. And then you do. Well, Hogan always lies. Hogan's always got a story. Ha ha. That's that Hulk Hogan. At some point, doesn't that run out of being amusing or funny? I guess for some people, it doesn't. For me, it has. And I think for a lot of other people, it has, too. And I guess we'll see. But boy, that will be really depressing if he comes back that quick.
Parts unknown. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. This is Jordan. I'm calling from Death Valley.
Death Valley. Holy smokes. What's up?
Big question of the week. Are we going to have a new women's bantamweight champion on Saturday? What do you guys think?
I think no. What do you think, Mike?
Nah, I don't think so either. Although, it'll be fun.
Yeah, Rhonda is just like, she's such a beast.
Well, do you think there's any chance that Betch takes?
Oh yeah, there's always a chance.
I'm not gonna lie.
I've seen every upset there's ever been in MMA. There's always a chance. But would I put any money on it? Of course not. I think Rhonda's going to destroy her, quite frankly. But who knows?
Yeah, that's the. I mean, but it's fun. I mean, she does look great and all that stuff. But it is in Rio, and maybe, you know, you never know what could happen in a fight. You just never know. Something could happen, but it's hard to see how Correa is going to, how she's even going to come close. I think it's going to be quick. I know Rhonda's has said she might, you know, extend this one out because she likes to beat people she really hates for a long period of time, which was a, you know, give Miesha Tate credit for surviving, you know, into the third round with Rhonda. But Betsy's not Miesha Tate, and Miesha Tate showed that again last night, how special she is. She and Uriah Faber should get into a fight for, like, the bridesmaid, you know, fans popularity title or something like that they should come up with, because I don't want to see Rhonda and Miesha again, although that's probably going to happen once Rhonda wins on Saturday night.
I just don't think you can get into Rhonda's head. And I think that when you make her mad, she wants to kill you. And she's not a head case in the sense that she's going to go in there and do something stupid. I just think she's trained like a machine. She's going to go into there with like a machine, and she's going to destroy this woman. Like a machine, I guess. I don't know.
Like a cold trained assassin, which she is. I mean, she's got, you know, the eyes squint down and they start getting a little low and she just goes right across and it's just cyborg light. Well, it's a wrong terminology, but just a, you know, again, a systematic destruction of that other person, you know, and heaven forbid if you leave a limb out there.
Tan the Man. You're on the air. I presume this is Tan the Man. We can't possibly have two callers named Tan.
From St. Louis, I mean, he needs to... Maybe there's Tans all across the country.
Tan, are you there?
No, this is the one and only, the A1 original Tan the Man from St. Louis, Lousy Misery.
Thank wow.
Damn, disrespecting your own arch.
You know you can move.
I do intend to, but... There would be no fun if I didn't poke fun every day.
That's right. What's on your mind?
Hey, really, a couple of quick things. First, Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. I'm not going to wish some death on this individual, but I will say this. I just, God forbid, he's ever put in a position to ever govern a large body of people or much less be a manager for a small crew at McDonald's, and that's all I'll say.
I don't think you're going to see Ryan governing a large number of people. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm just... But we know the topic of the day is Hogan.
Yes.
And for all the people that still want to drink the Kool-Aid, want to wear the red and yellow, and want to be under his tea bags, let me tell you all something. I've been anti-Hogan ever since I was 7, 8 years old. And so I stay consistent, at least, and I'm now in my 40s. With that being said, my dislike for Hogan is more than just for him dropping his N-bomb. It goes further back. You can even account for your own book, Brian. All the things that you wrote or helped write as far as his creative control, his ability to de-push people. That's my reasoning for not liking Hogan. And, of course, a lot of the stuff he tried to do with his kids and all those secret tapes that they got of him and his son and the stuff that they were trying to do with the reality show that never really came to pass anyway. But we just come to find out this man is no way at all anybody that we should be praising if we were to look at it on both the entertainment side as well as in his personal life. Now, should we judge it based on your personal life? No. But if you're going to put it out there for the masses to hear, hey, all we're doing is just doing like anything. We can just express an opinion.
All right, well, Tan, I want to thank you so much for the call here today. Tan, feeling justified after 30 years of disliking Hulk Hogan. Back in just a moment with more Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. We'll be back tomorrow, of course, at noon. And I expect to have a guest every day next week. I got to confirm a couple, but I'm thinking that's going to be the plan. And the week after that, I will be gone. And Mike is going to be holding down the fort for a full week. Are you ready for that, Mike?
I believe so. I should be ready at least by that point. It'll be this week of interviews that gets me ready, gets me hyped up. And then obviously begging people like Josh Nason and Vic Sosa to come on and help me out. That'll make me feel a lot better, too.
That's right. So that's coming up next week. Got two more shows coming up today. The Brian and Vinny show is going to be taking place later. We're going to talk Ring of Honor and New Japan on Access. Should be a lot of fun, as well as we are going to take the last trip ever to the Mongolian Grill before it closes down forever tonight. So hopefully I'll be in a decent state of mind. And then 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, After Dark Radio. I will be back live and free. You can find it on TuneIn Radio, or the link is up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. Search Dark Matter, search Art Bell, you'll find it. Art Bell is there Monday through Friday at midnight Eastern. I'm there Sundays at midnight Eastern. Got a very big guest tonight. Brian Forchner is the guest. We're going to be talking about a serial killer you've never heard of, Jack the Strangler from the turn of the century. Very interesting. We'll take your phone call, talk all of the latest strange news as well. That's After Dark Radio. More information on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com as well as AfterDarkRadioShow.com. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Thanks, everybody at Byline, Mike, all the callers, listeners, George Steele. We'll talk to you again next time. Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network.